This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. It's the start of earnings season in the US, and overnight the Dow rallied more than 200 points as the likes of Goldman Sachs and Netflix reported stellar earnings. On the line we have Tony Nash, Chief Economist and CEO at Complete Intelligence. Good morning, Tony. Can we begin with the question of the earnings and growth expectations that you have for US equities, especially in view of the tax cuts and greater fiscal spend?
Yeah, you know, we see U.S. markets doing very well, largely on the back of earnings. We expected the pause in February and from then on, but we expect things to do very well for the next few months, largely based on earnings. And to some extent, we see equities, we see multiples catching up a little bit based on earnings, although they're still a bit stretched.
Tony, can I ask you, is Trump's fiscal spending really on track? Is he getting the kind of, is he delivering on the promise that he had in the run-up to the U.S. presidential elections and thereafter?
I think so. I think especially given some of the losses they've had in Congress, I think they're doing a very good job. Now, the infrastructure program, which hasn't yet been announced, is likely to be pretty stellar once it is announced. And in the State of the Union, he said that it would be a $1.5 trillion program, whereas during the campaign, he said it would be a $1 trillion program. So I suspect he wouldn't have raised that by 50% if he wasn't confident of hitting the initial target.
Tony, given all that is happening in the U.S. markets right now, what sectors do you like at the moment?
Well, you know, we saw some issues with tech. I think we're going to start seeing some, in the next little bit, we're going to start seeing some interest in tech again, especially with guys like Netflix reporting very well. I think as the infrastructure program comes around, we'll start to see some of those sectors do very well as well. There was some excitement about them previously, and I think we'll start to see some of them come back. Even guys like GE, which haven't done very well, we may see guys in that realm start to do very well as some of those business lines come back in the U.S.
Hi, Tony. Hey, just want to get your thoughts on the dollar. I'm looking at the Bloomberg Dollar Index right now. It's declined by about 3.5% so far this year. What's your take on the dollar in the near to medium term?
Yeah, we're looking at the dollar starting to stabilize, and then we'll start to see appreciation accelerate probably in June. So our models have been telling us this for about 6 months. And as we start to see some of the consensus among the investment community, this seems to be where markets are headed.
So why June and July then? What's going to happen there? Is this a Fed-driven issue? Is this a fiscal-driven issue? You know, what's going on here? Why June?
I think you're starting to see a very good confluence of trends. You see the Korea issue starting to be resolved. You'll likely see some of these trade disputes resolved in the next couple months. You will likely see some action from the Fed, although not overly aggressive. And you'll likely also see some of the fiscal spending at least get a view as to when it's actually going to come online. So with a number of these things around trade and fiscal and Fed and other things, we're starting to see a really supportive dollar environment.
And we do know that, you know, for the June meeting, according to Fed Funds Futures, there's a 90% chance of a rate hike as opposed to the one coming up next month, only a 27-28% chance there. So we'll have to wait and see whether or not that materializes and it feeds into your confluence of factors there.
Tony, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is meeting President Trump in the U.S., but there are rumors in Japan that he's likely to resign in June after two cronyism scandals that have sent his approval ratings to an all-time low. What are your thoughts on this, and is there an expectation that he will survive this crisis?
You know, I think it's possible he'd step down, but I don't really see that as a likelihood. Japanese tend to love to hate their politicians, so you know, the fact that he has low approval ratings, I don't necessarily think that's all that different from previous politicians. Abe's been fairly successful in the economic realm, and he's done pretty well in the diplomatic realm as well. So I don't necessarily think that Abe's done a bad job, although, it is the LDP, and there is corruption. You know, it's a story as old as the LDP. So I don't think Japanese are really surprised by this. I think they're just disappointed that the LDP continues to be what it has been for some time.
Do you think that his resignation will impact the strong Japanese growth story, or are you of the view that the fundamentals in Japan are still strong?
You know, I think the fundamentals in Japan are okay. I think, you know, we should watch Kuroda more than we should watch Abe in terms of some of the strength of the Japanese economy, because he's been, you know, very supportive of a weak yen, although it's not as weak as it once was. He continues to give the signs to be supportive of a weak yen. I think you also have to look at other trends in Japan, like automation and robotics and other things, where you have a declining workforce, but you have aggressive automation in a number of industries that will continue to be supportive of productivity and the export environment for Japan.
West Texas crude fell to nearly $66 a barrel. Has the surge in oil prices recently, fueled largely by geopolitical risk, running out of steam?
I think it is, actually. And our view is that we'll see oil around the 61, WTI around the 61 mark in the next same month, say in May. As the Permian in Texas is producing as much oil as 10 of the OPEC members today. And one of the really interesting things about crude markets with America coming back online is that geopolitical risk becomes minimized as the flow of crude out of the U.S. rises. So we've all become accustomed to geopolitical risk being a calculation with crude prices out of the Middle East. But the fact is, as the U.S. produces more, you can reduce that political risk calculation. So we think that is negative for the price environment, with the volume coming on, with supplies, with export markets, and with the reduction of the political risk premium. The cost of U.S. crude has come down dramatically. A few years ago, it was $60. It's not even close to that now. So we're not even looking at that environment. You know, we're expecting, say, a 10 to 12% decline in WTI prices and crude prices generally before the end of the year.
Yeah, Tony, and we note that WTI right now at $66.58. Brent right now at $71.58. Now, so as you mentioned earlier, okay, we have become accustomed to geopolitical risks. So if that's the case, how much sway will the likes of OPEC and Russia, how much sway will they have on global oil prices, on Brent? Because we note that OPEC and Russia will meet in Saudi Arabia this week, you know, and it looks like they are going to keep on with their cuts in the supply equation.
Right. Well, all that really leads to is regionalization of prices, further divergence in regionalization of prices, right? And so you may have you'll definitely have a rise in demand out of the U.S. Given the export environment now. It's very accommodative, both for oil and gas. If you have geopolitical risk in places like the Middle East, they're going to have a better fiscal environment so they don't have to make, you know, $70, $80 a barrel just to pay their budget, right? So if their cost to pull it out of the ground is, say, $10, and you have a risk premium and transport costs that add up to $60, $70, I don't know how that's competitive with North American crude, especially, say, the Permian and some of these other areas in the U.S. where you're getting it out for, say, $35, $40.
Thank you so much for your insights, Tony. That was Tony Nash, Chief Economist and CEO at Complete Intelligence. Now we have a bit of breaking news. A former U.S. First Lady and literacy campaigner, Barbara Bush, has died at the age of 92. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.